Hello, this is The Lake Show. We're going to get started in just a couple minutes here. In the meantime, if you have IRC access, be sure to join us at irc.thelinuxshow.com and channel Pound Linux Show. So hang in there. We'll get started right after these messages.
You're listening to The Linux Show. Or maybe you're thinking about it. I don't know. This is probably a commercial. You want to find out about Linux and open source? Check us out at www.linuxshow.com for the best in Linux community news. Check us out.
And it is November the 1st, excuse me, 5th, 2002. Boy, I blew the date again. I can't believe this. And it's Election Day. How could I miss that up? Yes, it's November the 5th, 2002, celebrating another major event in the history of the United States. Once again, a election with no major, at least armed violence going around the country. We've done it again. Pulled off our bi-yearly little mini revolutions. It seems to keep our country going forward, and looks actually like a fairly clean, a fairly successful election. And I tell you, if all of the reports are true that I'm starting to hear, there are states all over the country that are posting record off-year election statistics, and so that's a real good sign for the health of democracy. Regardless of who you voted for, at least people are out there voting. And I'm hearing, I don't know whether the numbers are going to actually be true or not, but I am hearing that people are voting for libertarians in extremely large numbers, surprisingly large numbers. We may actually get above 2%. So it's incredible. It's a good election, a very good election.
What's the goal, 5%?
Pardon?
What's the goal, 5%?
Well,
I think good the cutoff to actually get the matching funds or whatever it is.
To get the matching funds, you have to have 5%. But that's an impossible goal at this point for the libertarians, to get matching funds in every state. It just ain't going to happen. Not soon. Maybe someday, but not soon. But we've got part of the crew here. Arnie and Russ are still actually in the act of getting home and getting themselves together from voting. Arnie's actually still at the polls.
I just got in.
Oh, there's Russ.
Yeah, I'm here.
And Doc is here. Hi, Doc.
I'm here too, yeah. I'm on my real phone now.
And Kevin and I are here as well. We should be seeing Arnie here at any moment. So let's go from coast to coast and just sort of like get a feel of the buzz. Right here in the Midwest, it seems people are pretty enthused about the level of participation in this election. There's still a lot of divisiveness. There's a lot of dirty politicking going on. But like I said earlier, both parties, the people are really coming out in huge numbers here in Illinois to vote in an off-year election. It's really surprising. What's the buzz out east, Russ?
Well, it's been real busy. It's been really strange, I'll tell you. I don't watch that much network television, but last night I was watching something or other, and it seemed like every commercial break was an endless stream of political ads, and most notably, the two gubernatorial candidates slugging it out on the airwaves about who's lying about what. I don't think I've ever seen, and this is kind of a strange statement to make, but I don't think I've ever seen this many political ads in the D.C. area since I came here about 15 years ago.
I wonder if they're cheaper or something, because it seems to me like everywhere it's everything's filled up with ads.
Well, I can answer your question for you, Doc. Yes, they're cheaper. Political ads are at a special rate.
Yeah, that's always been the case, though, hasn't it? I mean,
always been. It's by law.
Yeah.
The to prevent anybody from loading the deck on any one newspaper or any one network, the law of the land, this is a national law, is that whatever your advertised lowest rate of advertising fee is, that's what you charge to any political candidate. So if you charge, $1,000 a minute for your TV advertising time at 2 o'clock in the morning, that's what you charge regardless of what time of day that ad appears, if it's a political ad. And so they get a good rate, and that's why there's so much of it, is because they do get ads cheap.
I think another thing is the with the proliferation of channels on television, to hundreds, that non-political advertising has migrated all over the place. And I think that opens up the local TV channels
to
a lot more inventory.
I'm sure you're right. I'm sure the network affiliates are just happy to have the coin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably definitely the case. Now, Russ, you're talking about the two candidates sort of slugging it out, accusing each other of lying about stuff. Have you had any of those commercials, or have you seen any of those commercials where the ad is encouraging the voters of one political party to call the candidate's office and telling him or her to stop lying?
There's been a lot on the radio saying to call the candidate of the other party and tell them that their solutions don't work. that's been a big one for Republican National Committee aimed at our Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, who is the Democratic runner for governor, and those have been playing for a month or more.
Yeah, well,
especially on news radio.
They've been really big here in the Chicago area, and I understand, and I'm just taking this anecdotally, because I can only see the evidence to say, yeah, it makes sense, but I have been told by a relative of mine who lives across the Hudson from Manhattan, and he said he was telling me that the advertising is that kind of advertising of call the other party or call the other candidate. It's like every other ad on TV in New York, and it's so prolific in New York City that they even had an ad, a fake version of one of those ads on Saturday Night Live last weekend.
Mm. And so really?
It's penetrated the common culture here.
Incredible.
So what's it like out west, Doc?
I was just checking the LA Times site just to see what it says about the polls, and it says it's a low turnout, among other things.
Really?
Yeah. Let's see.
I'm surprised at that. Everywhere else, you're hearing about
record low turnout is predicted after Californians endure relentless negative campaigns in an 8-month general election campaign. Well, of course, the big race here is for governor, and nobody likes either of those guys. The incumbent is. Is Gray Davis, possibly the dullest and least liked incumbent in a long time, but he's running a guy named Bill Simon, who, you know, had all kinds of legal problems along the way, and has sort of been emerged, has sort of been revealed as somewhat of a boob, and he's had Rudy Giuliani campaigning for him here, but. That doesn't quite cut it. It's pathetic. It's just really sad. No, nobody likes either of these guys. And Gray Davis has actually waged a brilliant campaign, considering he had really strong potential opponent in a guy named Reardon, the former mayor of Los Angeles. But during the primaries, he actually ran against Reardon. rather than against whoever the Democratic opponent was, and caused Ray Reardon to some degree to lose to Simon, so that he would have a, so that Gray Davis would have a weaker opponent in the general election, and it has, and it worked brilliantly. Sad, it's just a sad case. It's a sad case. I don't even know what most of the propositions are. It's a whole other thing. We have this proposition system in California. I generally tend not to vote for them because I don't like that way of making laws. But that's another thing. But
I tell you, I voted on a proposition today that had to be the lamest, sucky proposition I have ever seen on a political ballot in my life. And not that I'm against taxes for education. If you're going to have a tax on anything, education, doing right for the kids is the thing that you like to see money spent on. But on our ballot today, it was a proposition to allow an increase of the tax rate for this organization, a countywide college called the College of DuPage County. Now, I don't live in DuPage County, okay? But the county of DuPage is claiming that so many citizens from other counties go to their college that they want the right to tax into other counties. And I think that's just a totally bizarre notion and is opening up a Pandora's box that may never get shut again. So I'm hoping this resolution goes down to defeat. But
you should be in Berkeley, where there's a resolution that will outlaw selling coffee that isn't grown in the shade or organic. I'm not kidding. And it has a chance of passing.
Grown in the shade?
Yeah, yeah. It's you can only sell extremely politically correct coffee in Berkeley. That's the idea.
How can you grow coffee in the shade?
I don't even know. We were in Jamaica recently, and the coffee I saw was in the sun. So
yeah.
But let's see. Go to
Good
Google News
too,
and look
right?
up coffee in Berkeley, and see what it says. It's silly. I'm sure they'll have some news on it. Yeah. Yeah. California is set to take vote on PC coffees, meaning politically correct coffees.
Man.
Yeah. And
yeah. Well, I bow to you. That definitely is the epitome of silliness. But nobody credited Americans for being sensible, did they?
No.
So, well, let's go ahead and get started with the first segment of the show before we do nothing but talk about politics. And not that we're not going to talk about politics tonight, but I'll kick off with what was probably the biggest story of 2001, and it was in the headline posting of our show tonight, and that is the question being raised: has the fat lady finally sung? To those of you who were longtime listeners of the show, you know that we followed the Judge Penfield case, Microsoft versus the USA. We followed that case very closely, and to the point that it seemed like we were talking about it for about 25% of the show for a period of about 3 or 4 months, and finally had to swear off talking about it for a while. But unfortunately, last Friday, for those of you who are unaware, the case finally had a submitted ruling last Friday. And unfortunately, this is very, very ugly, very, very sad, but unfortunately, it's just the way it is. Microsoft is pretty much gotten everything that they asked for in their proposed version of the settlement. So that's not to say that Microsoft isn't going unpunished completely. But those steps which they are getting punished on are specifically based upon Microsoft's own criteria. So whether this is actually punitive punishment remains to be seen. I think it's really a very sad day in law. Unfortunately, I just don't think Colleen Colleen Kohler Coatley. I don't think she was prepared to come up with a sensible, happy medium between Judge Penfield's radical solution of breaking up Microsoft and Microsoft's proposal of saying, oh, geez, we realize we're guilty and we promise we'll never do it again. I think there's a happy medium in there somewhere, and unfortunately that happy medium is not going to be selected, and you just have to sit there now and look at this ruling and say, well, how long will it be before Microsoft just completely resorts back to their previous behaviors? So it's from my opinion, it's definitely a disturbing turn of events from a legal standpoint. The issue, though, is on the bright side. If you're going to take a bright side, is Microsoft even relevant?
That's the question, I think.
Okay, Microsoft, in winning, may have a short-term return of clout, and they likely will exercise that short-term clout. But I think based upon the release of their last two licensing schemes, first of all, the XP spyware licensing agreement, the software rental agreement, if you want to put it into a new term, and more recently this summer, the release of the new business license, the quote-unquote software assurance program, which is, again, just a lease your software scheme where Microsoft will, bill you every 6 months and make sure that you have all of the appropriate software updates, whether you like them or not. I think those last two steps at waging war against the computing public have now backfired on Microsoft to the point that it's a key thing in this discussion of Microsoft's relevancy at this point is that Steve Ballmer recently apologized for the software assurance license. The way he issued his apology was, gee, we're sorry we put this kind of a license on you businesses during a recession. When the reality was, we really know what he was saying. It was, gee, we didn't realize this was going to turn into be a public relations disaster. We're sorry, we didn't mean it. We'll try and figure out a way to back out of this later. And I question at this point, even though Microsoft has one, whether they're relevant anymore. They pissed off so many people at this point that I've got to believe that the market is going to just continue moving forward. I mean, the desktop phenomenon alone has shown us what's going on. It's there. So that's my story of the week, and if anybody wants to comment on it further, go right ahead. Or, Doc, do you have a story?
Well, I have just a couple things. One is that in her judgment, it was clear in what she said that she felt that Microsoft was still in denial about having broken the law. And she quoted Machiavelli to Gates specifically, which is interesting. She said that, I forget what she quoted exactly, but she came back and said that she planned to exercise her full panoply of powers to ensure that the letter and spirit of her decree are carried out. I don't know how she can. I really don't know what her range of remedies are there. Her full panoply may not be that large, for all I know. But it was kind of, that was sort of an interesting grace note in the otherwise sort of rubber stampy quality of her judgment. No, but that's one thing. The other thing is, if folks go to the Google News tab and go to the new Google News site and just type in Linux and search for Linux and then scroll down to, there's a headline that comes up, Easy Breezy Beautiful Linux OS from ZDNet Australia, but underneath that is a piece called Microsoft's New Set of Hurdles in the New York Times. And that is a really good piece that lays out exactly what the problem is right now, which is that through its entire history, Microsoft has kind of come up from the bottom. They've actually been as expensive as it's been in many ways. They've come in at this sort of the cheap end of things. And now there's Linux coming in at free underneath that. And there's a piece by Steve Lohr, and he's saying, you know, the ruling by a federal judge rejecting strong sanctions means it will not have to change its ways much. But then it adds that the rise of the Internet and Linux especially just utterly changed the playing field for Microsoft. They quote David Smith, who's a really good analyst with Gartner, saying Linux is a huge long-term threat because it completely reverses the economic landscape. I may have mentioned last week that on the boat I talked to guys like a gentleman named Roland Smith with LSI Logic, this is a chip company. It's a substantial chip company. They're going entirely to Linux, and they're not. I mean, it's with desktops. It's with engineering workstations. Everything at kind of low end, high end, in between, porting Unix products over, and it's mostly because they just don't want to deal with licensing anymore. That's a big thing. You know, we went. Hardware is good and cheap, and on top of that, it's just an absence of hassle.
The hardware is so cheap now. I mean, I go to the computer fair at Pomona at the LA County Fairgrounds
every
month. Hi. And the prices are ridiculous. I mean, you know, I can get 512 meg of RAM for, you know, $50 or under $50. You know, it's like ridiculous.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, it's
hard drives are $80 for 100 gigabytes. It's like,
unbelievable. Yeah, you can buy a terabyte of RAM.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we could tour talk and someone could really make a serious effort of putting together a serious cluster. You know, I mean, something amazing, you know, major chunk of computing hardware, and basically, you go to the fairgrounds and spend just a few thousand, and come out of there with something major, because it's all there, and you can just put it all together.
Yeah, I'm predicting the business in racks is going to go up.
Racks, it looks good to me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's simple.
Fill your rack. Buy a rack, fill it with iron.
Yeah, I mean, Netwinder was like 2 years too early.
Well, this guy from LSI Doc, he's part of that embedded market, and they really do have their finger on it. That the licensing cost is the major impediment.
And here's the big thing: what Microsoft did last summer. Microsoft has always been a very marketing and market savvy company, and they've never gotten full credit for this, but they have been. But they really broke faith with their markets last summer when they insisted, in a down market, when everybody's struggling, on just extracting a pound of flesh from everybody. And as one guy put it to me, he said, well, you know, it's like, okay, what a lot of companies do when they signed up again, they renewed. It was kind of like, you know, like Y2K. It was like they expected a big blow up. They knew it wouldn't happen, so they just put off the problem. But their orientation to Microsoft is, you know what, we'll pay licensing fees for another year. And then we're gone. But it's sort of like, okay, here's the money. We'll take the hostage, but we're going to come back and kill you. You know, it's like, you know, we've had it. They've just had it. And that was, you know, as Eric Raymond explained it on the boat when we were there, and it was a really good point. I thought that this is what a monopoly has to do. They can't get, you know, they're at 100% or as close as they'll ever get. So all they can do is get more money out of people. Well,
they have to resell the same thing to their existing customers.
Yeah, for more.
They can't get more customers, so they have to sell the same thing back to their over and over again.
And suddenly, when there are alternatives, people will pursue them. And And this is also the fate of every monopoly. In other words, the market will punish them eventually, and it's going to happen. And Linux is there. And the sense we got talking about kernel 2.6 on the trip is that, you know, a year from now, when that's out, and you know, device driving is better, and there are many more devices that are ready, and the distributions are one and a half generations beyond what they are now, and Open Office and Star Office are pretty ready, and Mitch Kapoor's new thing, that's another piece of news, is it won't be ready yet, but sooner or later things like it will be. We're just going to see, you know, Linux desktops selling into big companies in mass quantities, really, really, really huge quantities. And
what's interesting about Eric's argument is, Doc, is that you know, like you think about products that you buy. I mean, if I buy a Linux Journal, I buy it every month or buy it a subscription every year, and it's something I rebuy. But the thing is, it provides new stuff. Or if you buy something normal commodities, that you use them up and then you rebuy them.
And you're a motivated buyer.
Yeah, and then like a good product, like my car wears down and I got to buy another car. You know, and normal companies and normal businesses live off of this providing quality products like Linux Journal that people want to rebuy. And,
yeah.
And Microsoft software doesn't wear out. It doesn't wear out. The only thing that Microsoft, because they got the wrong business model, the only thing Microsoft can do is resell the same thing by obsoleting the software, or
right.
Trying to.
The same people over and over again.
And
they could do it with these big companies. And there are a lot of companies that are going to stay with it for a while, because there are a lot of applications that do run only on their software.
But they've got to make the software wear out.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is, if it's such great software, why does it wear out?
Yeah, but what's going to happen is the companies are going to run the numbers. You know, they're going to run the numbers and they're going to say, you know, do we need all these, and a lot of ancillary costs, but do we need all these MSIEs laying around? You know, do we need the maintenance cost of this? Do we need, you know, service pack upgrades that, you know, that break the relationship of the computer with a lot of its peripherals. I mean, these are things that happen and that are very costly across an entire company.
Oh yeah, putting on a Microsoft service pack is something you do not do lightly.
Hey,
yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's
and there, and but another thing that's happening, and this is something Dave Sifry pointed out to me this last week. There's a company called Intersil. Okay, Intersil makes a chipset. They make a number of chipsets. So one of them is a Wi-Fi chipset. And they have a new thing out. If you go to intersil.com, Intersil, I think you just look up Linux in there in the search part of it. But they have a new chipset that runs on Linux. And they didn't even put a whole lot of thought into it. It's like, wait a minute, this stuff's free. We're going to put it in here. But what you have now is what I call, instead of an access point, you have a hackcess point. You can hack it. You can take it and do anything you want with it. And you're not working on VXWorks or you know, just some little browser interface. You can get in, you can SSH into the thing. You can do all kinds of. It's a little Unix box. Your access point's a little Linux Unix box, a little Linux box. And you can use your Linux tools. They're all there. And then you can burn yourself a nice little. You know, you could create some software that runs on it and that turns it into a router or turns it into some special thing that's part of your retail. So who knows? Who cares? I mean, it's just, but you can do stuff with it. And suddenly the threshold of enterprise with these things, people can buy them and then, you know, create something cool with it and then sell it in quantity by burning your solution onto Flash onto these things. And it wouldn't be possible or very easy if it wasn't running on Linux, on embedded Linux. And these guys just threw it in there. Why? Because it's free and it's easy and it's no problem. You know, and it just takes all of that noise that's Microsoft trying to make money out of the whole problem, or anybody else trying to make money. It's saying you can't make money here anymore. But you know what? You can't make money in the net either. And look what that makes possible. That's really what's going on, I think. That all this stuff is turning into the net, and Linux is just, you know, a layer on the net. and it's a free layer, and it's very cool. And Microsoft can't do a damn thing about it.
Yeah, the at least so far.
Yeah, they can't.
They bought themselves a new lease on life with this decision, but...
Right, and it's a lease on death, you know.
Yeah.
It's still dead company walking. They're going to live, they're going to find other things to do, but the truth is that the Windows business is dead in 3 or 4 years, and the Office suite business is in major trouble in another several years.
They keep on changing the document format to keep up.
Yeah, but you know what just happened is all of the Star Offices and the Think Freeze of the world.
The Abbey words.
Yeah, what they're going to do is say, you know what? As far as we're concerned, Microsoft finished with this at 98, you know, and so we're going to spec this to the 98 generation of this, and if you want a spinning logo in PowerPoint, you're going to live without it. That's okay, you know. Most people don't want that.
Well,
you know that. Go ahead, Russ.
Well, you know, I don't know if people saw this. I stumbled across it. I don't know if anyone had it tonight. I didn't see it, but apparently there are reports circulating that the next version of Office will not support Windows 9X generation users.
Yeah, actually, we talked about that last week.
Yeah, and
it's just that it won't run on that. I think that's what it is.
Hmm?
And I don't think it's a file format issue. It's really, files.
Except one of the things I read about it, though, is that it's going to start using the encapsulated XML stuff that they've been threatening to use for some time. So it makes me think that they're about to change formats for real soon. I mean, this looks like a preparatory step to do whatever the goop is that they intend to do.
Well, it'll be a decision not to interoperate, and that'll be a bad decision.
Yep.
Yes, it will.
You know, they and AOL right now are still making a decision not to interoperate with instant messaging, and this last week, I think it's the IETF, you know, announced a working group for what's now called XMPC or XMMS.
XMPP.
What is it now?
It's XMPP.
Right. This is Jabber. This is the Jabber protocol. So Jabber got its protocol recognized by the IETF, and the rest is probably going to be history.
That's good, because that Jabber protocol is pretty flexible.
Yeah, and they're going to keep working on it, and but essentially there are other working groups for the other protocols, Simple, and there are several others. It's not like the world will only have one protocol.
Well, Jabber's is Simple.
Yeah, no, but there is one actually called Simple, or
Simple, okay,
something
but
like that, but. Oh. Like it's an acronym of some sort, but there are, you know, in the real world, Jabber is deployed in millions of locations, and the AOL protocol isn't at all except on disposable PCs. End of story. Same with Microsoft's protocol, I'm repressing it. MSN.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
Does anybody actually connect to the internet with MSN?
Oh, lots of people.
Oh, lots of people do. Yeah, millions of them.
Arnie, they bought computers based upon a 3-year contract.
Ah, bundling.
Microsoft giving them a $300 rebate on their $1,200 computer.
And then they shove poo poo down their throats.
Well, you see, nobody told them that computer was really only worth $400.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then, by the way, you bought a $400 computer for
$1,200, and you got a $300 rebate for signing up for 3 years of worth of MSN.
Yeah, yeah. Now for the next 3 years, you've got to swallow this poop.
Yeah, such a bargain. Such a bargain. But, you know, it's the old P.T. Barnum bait and switch thing, you know.
If everybody wonders what hell is like, you just buy one of those machines.
Yeah. You got a Dell dude.
A Dell dude.
Oh, man. In other Microsoft news, let's throw this into this mix, the announcement from IBM saying that they're going to go head-to-head with .NET, I think, with an open source product.
Yeah. Is it that Eclipse?
Yes.
Yeah.
Irving is pushing that.
Big news.
I thought Eclipse was just the IDE.
It eclipses a hell of a lot more. I sat down, I talked to the IBM guys about that. Jeepers, I forget what show it was. I think it was Linux World New York or something like this.
Yeah. It's been out for a while, actually, yeah.
Yeah, and it's big. And, in fact, it was at the time it was ticking off a lot of the Sun people, because the Sun people are saying, well, you should be using Java and Java Beans instead of this stuff here. And so there was a bit of a pecking contest going on between the two organizations about, you know, why the hell is this here?
So it's TDDI all over again. Okay.
One of the things that IBM was telling me at the time was that, well, yeah, it can address a lot of the things that Java and Java Beans addresses, but it was designed to be a lot more flexible, so it can actually be used in several languages and all sorts of other stuff beyond the way it is currently implemented. A lot of the technical details are actually incredibly flexible, according to what they're saying, so that this can take on many, many different faces over time, which, you know, it sounds like it could be real interesting.
Yeah, especially saying that they have recently announced it's going to now be all open source. I think that really does make the Eclipse product take a completely new position within, you know, IBM is once again leading a major Linux/open source effort. They just keep on coming back and surprising the hell out of me.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting wrinkle too. Is when you see what we're seeing is that the software development in the world right now is basically being led by the open source community. And Microsoft has always screamed and yelled and saying, "Oh, well, you know, open source doesn't innovate, you know, yada 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 yada." But look at it. Look what's happening. Look at the tools that are available now for open source, and look at the tools that are available for Microsoft. In Microsoft, you got Visual C and Visual Basic, and you know their C# and whatever. They have to go to this proprietary language or whatever. You know, they're trying to make it public, but you know, hey, it's a hard sell against C and
right.
PHP and those. But we got the tools, the tool set. The standard tool set now.
Okay. I got to jump in here and say, okay, it's 8:40, Chicago time. Can we put the Microsoft story to bed so we can talk about other news of the week?
Yeah.
So, Doc, do you have any other stories of the week?
I just threw mine in, I think.
Okay.
So.
Well, Arnie, you were just talking. What's your hot items of the week?
Well, let's see. All mine are Microsoft. CNET is reporting, is Microsoft losing ground to Linux? And some of these things some of the topics in this article are, have been hit on by other people already, so I'll just gloss over it real quickly. They're talking about mostly in the European and African, markets, there's really, really a big move to ditch Microsoft, and especially in public funded programs. And one of the reasons Microsoft's losing ground in these is because of the licensing. They cite licensing as a real problem because they just, you know, who wants to pay the exorbitant license fees? One of the things that's cited in this article is SchoolNet Namibia. And SchoolNet Namibia is another one of my stories, and there's another link I sent, where this organization, which is trying to bring computing to Namibia schools, was trying to work with Microsoft to get their machines licensed, and they were basically given a $2,000 break on licensing of, let's see, what was it? Office Pro application software, and then in exchange they were then required to buy $9,300 for the operating system, you know, and it would cost them $9,300 per seat to save $2,000 you know, and of course this guy has this really scathing open letter to George Ferreira, regional manager Microsoft South and East Africa, and SchoolNet rebuffs Microsoft, and that's a link I sent, so it should be up on the Linux Today site, Linux Show site. Read the letter; it's pretty funny. The other really good article is from The Economist, and that's on economist.com, and that link should be up on the Linux Show site too. And it's entitled Free Thinkers: Can Free Source Code Stop Microsoft? And boy, this guy is really on target. He is talking about the real networks opening up their software. And I'm going to read a paragraph from this. This is a pretty good paragraph. This may sound like a desperate echo of 1998 when Netscape, struggling in Microsoft's chokehold, published the source code of its web browser, an initiative that yielded very few real results until this June when the first serious new version of the open source browser Mozilla was released. Yet Real Networks is not playing defense. It is trying to encourage the creation of a common multimedia software infrastructure for every kind of file format and device, thus thwarting Microsoft's ambitions in this promising market. And that is the kernel of truth in behind open source, is that when you open up the source, you're going to have to open up the file formats and device drivers. And if that happens, then open source wins and Microsoft loses with their proprietary stuff. You know, proprietary stuff is just not going to work on a public internet that's based on open technologies.
I have an election result.
Oh.
In North Carolina, in Howard Coble's district, Tara Sue Grubb, the Libertarian candidate, got 9% of the vote.
Oof. Shit.
That's a lot.
Wow.
That's a lot. Nice.
There's a lot against a guy who's running unopposed, okay?
Unopposed.
An old dude who's been there forever and has been much loved. I mean, 1 out of 10 people walked in and voted for this girl.
Cool.
And she ran on a weblog, guys. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And she ran with her kid. I mean, it was pretty amazing.
What's her name in Washington who ran the sneaker Senate lady? What's her name?
I've been watching the Libertarian numbers on the TV. I got the TV running in the background.
I bet she's got more than any other Libertarian.
She may have, because they're consistently running 2 to 3% nationally.
And here's a Libertarian got 12% in District 3, Gary Goodson. That's also in North Carolina.
Hey, Doc, we got to contact those people.
We do. Dude, that's very good.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, in other political news, Arnie, I don't mean to step on you, but somebody in the chat room said, hey, Harvey Pitch has resigned. And so I went over to CNN's website and looked into it, and yep, absolutely, he got fired.
He fired himself, didn't he?
Yeah, but...
he was investigating himself, so he looked in his pants and said, I got to fire my ass.
By the way, Harvey Pitt is this Securities and Exchange.
Yeah, under threats from the White House, or implied threats from the White House, he resigned this evening.
They probably said, you know what happened to that car in Yemen?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Now. The last article I have is the Windows cheaper than Linux, says Microsoft.
Oh, yeah.
And this is another Gartner, Microsoft-funded Gartner study. And I think we need to just laugh.
We have David
read it to laugh. And
he's saying that Microsoft's a big trouble, too. So.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Gartner is, you know, I don't know what Gartner's problem is. You know, any resemblance of what Gartner publishes and the truth is you know, very suspect.
Yeah, sometimes they do some okay stuff.
Well, it depends on whether it's independent or not.
Yep.
Yeah.
Our good friend Joe Barr has published a review of Knoppix, which is the GUI installer for Debian, on linuxworld.com, and you might want to go over there and click on through to Joe Barr, give him some support. He's a good guy, good writer, and we all like him.
I love the guy, Joe Barr.
Yeah, nice guy.
Russ, do you have any hot stories of the week?
Yeah, a few quickies here. There's one over at MIS Web called Ready for Prime Time, and it's the important thing about this is basically Forrester Research saying that Linux is now ready to go. And it doesn't come as a big shock to us. We've been believing that for some time and have been going with it for some time. But this is really important for a lot of the IT world, because this is one more report that's saying, go ahead and deploy. And that's really important from that aspect. It's the permission that a lot of IT managers are looking for. The story itself really doesn't have much in the way of new information, but it's good to see that it's out there. My other piece of real good meat was one at WashingtonPost.com, and I guess Washington Post must be being hammered for election results or something, because I can't even bring the thing up anymore. But the name of the article is Europe's Microsoft Alternative, and it talks about a region in Spain that is doing a mass migration of both government and of government consumer and business desktops to Linux, being organized by this man who, unfortunately, I don't have the thing in front of me, but he was an educator and is now involved in government over there. And if I remember correctly, it talked about how they've already migrated something like 10,000 machines to Linux, and they expect to do another 100,000 this next year. And this is in Spain, a region of Spain, and it's very cool stuff.
Are these just government computers, or...?
No, they seem to be saying it was government and consumer and everything. What they're trying to do is they're trying to get as many people online as possible. They're saying that, you know, that's where the power is being able to get to the web and being able to do all these various things that brings you. But you can't do it if you're poor unless you can find a tool that is powerful and inexpensive, and in this case, that's Linux.
It so, can't afford that license, can
so, you? So they're pushing big time, and in fact, I couldn't even get to the second page of the article because the post is not responding worth a damn. It's getting me the banner up, and then it's not bringing up the text anymore. So I guess they must be being hammered right now. But check tomorrow, folks. It's an article worth reading. There is one other piece which actually has nothing to do with either Linux or Microsoft, but it's just a damn fine article as far as I'm concerned. It's at InfoWorld this week, Tom Yeager doing Above the Noise, and it's a piece called Economic Survival Lessons from Fools. And it talks about how when things are rough like this, you see people come into what they call trough marketing. And he talks about how the tried and true formula of innovation, education, and advertising is expensive. So these people come along and say, hey, we can get you noticed. And he includes the following quote, "The first step is to stop selling your product or service short. You have an inconsequential point release of your software coming up? No, you don't. You have a major mandatory upgrade, and you won't support users of the previous release. You can't figure out how to get more revenue from your paid-up customers? Rewrite your licenses and service policies so that tomorrow all your accounts owe you money. Through the magic of Hyperbowl and a garish paint job, last year's mediocre server will be transformed into today's groundbreaking appliance that will usher in a new era of enterprise computing." Close quote. And he rolls on this, and there's just a lot of nice points here. And the bottom line that he comes to, and this fits in really well with some of the Microsoft discussion earlier, is that you know, these people may be successful now selling, you know, a lot of noise and not much substance. But the time's going to come real soon, like Doc was saying, when things begin to heat up again in this industry, and those are the people who are going to be left behind, and they won't even know how they got there. You need substance. And in the IT world particularly, you need to be dealing with substance, producing substance, and there's too much fluff out there. And I think that really molds very well, though, into the whole open source mindset, because the open source mindset has always been one of produce the substance, and you know, we'll worry about marketing fluff afterwards. And I think the whole world is beginning to, well, at least the whole IT world is beginning to roll that way. And companies that don't figure that out are going to find themselves being left behind. And I think that's going to be, you know, true, frankly, inside some of the, what Microsoft is doing, because they're trying to bully their way forth and not sell the substance. So
all they're trying to do is sell the same substance over and over again.
Yeah,
which
is basically no substance at all. At that point.
Yeah.
At that point, they're just marketing to market.
Oh no, it's software assured.
Trustworthy.
Trustworthy. Best buzzword you can find.
Software assured.
Install our new patch. You know, mega patch.
No, that's the job of the Microsoft solution provider. That's not Microsoft's job.
But that's my deal for the day.
Okay. Kevin, do you have some product releases or updates for us?
Oh, yeah, a couple of quickies. To coincide, I'm sure it's just a coincidence, with Jabber's announcement with the IETF, AOL has started pushing an enterprise AOL Instant Messenger server / gateway. So for $30 per employee, managers can monitor and control access of their users to their instant messaging system.
And for nothing, you can get the same thing from Jabber.
Yeah, or I was about to say that. You jumped right in there. Good.
Jabber is really quite good.
Yeah.
And stable these days.
Yeah, and will work with all kinds of clientware, too.
Yeah, there's lots of clients.
Yeah. Any more, Kevin?
Yeah, there's a new release of Phoenix, the lightweight Mozilla browser, and this project is definitely coming along. It is still written in Mozilla's XUL interface language, but it is remarkably fast, and the functionality is quickly catching up to where Galleon is.
Galleon is good. It's one I use. It still crashes on me once in a while, but you know it's good.
Well, browsers will crash.
Yep.
It's inherent in the fact that there's so many new types of applications that are being put on web that, you know, they're products that will never be done.
I just turn off Java and JavaScript then and go back and things work.
That helps, but then you miss out on...
You miss out a lot of stuff because of JavaScript.
I turn it back on when I...
Yeah, you miss out on StarWars.com and the Dancing Yoda.
Oh, well. Who wants to miss that?
That's right. We're creating links anyway.
Everybody, I hope everybody goes out and votes. It's really important to voice your choice.
Absolutely. Okay, Kevin, if there's nothing else, let's take a real short break and come back with the second segment of the show tonight. It'll be a short second segment, so don't worry about us going too much beyond 9 o'clock. So everybody, hang in there. Kevin, put on a tune or an advertisement. Whose music are we playing tonight?
We are playing a band called The Experiments, and there's a link on the front page for them.
Yes, and if you have friends who are in a band that wants to give us free use of music, they too can become part of the Linux Show family. So send us those names or have them contact us so we don't have to try chasing them down. So everybody hang in there. We'll be right back.
I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the sponsors who make the Linux Show possible. I'd like to thank VA Linux. Oops, no, they're not VA Linux anymore. They are now VA Software. Hope they don't change their name again pretty soon. I'm going to have to make another commercial. But check out VA Software and learn all about the SourceForge development platform for internal company development projects. Or if you're just a little guy but want to get a flavor of it all, check out SourceForge.net and spread the word. on open source development platforms. So you need an email server, huh? Well, check out one of our sponsors. What? The Linux Show has sponsors? Yeah, well, how the hell do you think we pay the bandwidth bill around here? Well, it's really more the phone bill, not the bandwidth bill. Phone bill is killing us. But anyways, back to our sponsor. Check out the folks at www.littlebluebox.com and buy their stuff and sponsor.
And we're back with segment two of the Linux Show for November the 5th, 2002. I almost said November 1st again. God, I don't know what's wrong with me. We're jumping into segment number two. It's going to be a real short segment. And we're just going to take a couple of minutes to catch everybody up, make a couple announcements on some changes that are going on here at the Linux Show, and how we're going to be getting ourselves reorganized a little bit for both the short-term and the long-term future. The first issue that we want to tell everybody about is one dealing with the aspect of growth here at Geekcast and the Linux Show. We made an announcement back, oh, I don't know when it was, maybe a month ago, that we had finally gotten all the paperwork in place where we were going to produce a couple of video editions of the Linux Show. And that is still proceeding forward. I've been over to the studio a couple of times now. I've got actually, they don't have sufficient computer power. They basically have a couple old Pentiums kicking around. And so I've got to bring some computers in, and I've got to have a DSL line installed inside the studio so that we can hook Doc and Russ and Arnie up to the show live so that we've got talking heads appearing on computer screens so that we can do this video edition.
God, the cameras will break when they get married.
Hey, but at least I've got a good price on really cheap webcams that are pretty good. And they'll do 800 600 resolution, which will come out okay as cutting them into the video. At least according to the engineers at the studio, they'll come in okay. Not the kind of resolution that people are used to seeing on the major networks, but it won't be too bad for a starting venture. And but that is in the not-too-distant future. And so I'm going to be needing to spend a good deal of time during the next couple of months working on the video effort. There's a lot more to it than I thought there was going to be. There always is when you're doing things in life. But in addition to that, for those of you who are regular listeners, you probably are aware that I have missed a few shows over the course of the summer. Got some minor personal issues that are dealing with my own health, and so that for that reason, I also need to take a little bit of time off. So we're going to reorganize ourselves a little bit so that I've got the ability to not be spending quite so much of a major segment of my life producing and being on the Linux Show. It's surprising how much this little hour-long, hour-and-a-half-long webcast can suck out of your life. So if we're going to make the video thing work, I've got to back away from the webcast a little bit for the short term. So starting next week, we're going to begin the process of a couple of major changes in the Linux Show. One of them is that Kevin is going to start doing some of my traditional role as the lead host and sort of steering the direction of our conversations. And so I'm real happy that Kevin's stepping up to the plate to take over that job for me so that I can take more time for the video project. In addition, we're trying to split up some of the production effort that I do on the audio show, so I've got time to do the production effort on the video show. And so to try and split that up as much as possible, what we're going to try and do is we've taken the things that we do to actually produce the show and split them up into three different categories. And we're going to try and find different people who are willing to help us out to do those different categories. And so we're looking for people who are part of our own community who would like to join with us and become a part of the team. This is a non-paying job. Believe me, we make no money doing this. We do this for the benefit of the Linux community and for open source communities as well. So if you'd like to help out, we'd love to have you join our team on a production level. For those of you who are old-timers, you know we used to have PJ kicking around, and PJ will be coming back to us eventually, but he will not be coming back to us at the level. PJ used to be a major part of our production team here. And so if you happen to be a experienced web developer and would like to put in an hour or two a week helping us manage the Linux Show website, that there's a role that somebody could easily step into. There's a couple other roles as well that are production roles. So we're looking to you people out there who have been listening to the show to help us to make this thing grow without having to go and search for lots and lots and lots of dollars to make it happen. If we have to go and search for lots of dollars up front to make it all happen, we think we're going to end up being beholden to some vendors that we might not otherwise want to be beholden to. So that's part of our goal. The other thing is money. This thing is remarkably expensive to produce, and so we're asking again our own community out there to help us locate a couple of small sponsors. We're going to try and offload the burden of one of our cost categories onto a sponsor. We've got all of our bandwidth very well covered by partners, by trading resources for bandwidth. And so that's all covered, but we are looking for, we're going to need to raise about $3,000 a year, not a huge amount of money. So we're looking for a couple of small sponsors. So if you're out there listening and you know somebody who's in the Linux biz who could use a little cheap promotion and do good at the same time, make sure that you send information forward to us. Russ is going to be one of the people who's stepping up to the plate, and he's going to be taking part of that production work off of my shoulders to help me out. So if you're interested in helping out, regardless of the role, email us at staff, S-T-A-F-F, at thelinuxshow.com. Same thing if you know somebody who would be a beneficial sponsor that would get benefit out of sponsoring. You know who our audience are. You listen to us. So if you know somebody who is a good fit with us and can put up with our nonsense, send their name to us at that same email address, staff@thelinuxshow.com. And I think that's really it. I think that's all we're going to say tonight. We'll talk about it more in detail next week, when Kevin starts to phase into the role as announcer. I'm going to sort of go into the background and run what controls I can from my chair and let Kevin do some of the talking. And we'll start working our way through this one week at a time. But keep your fingers crossed. It's a transition we got to do, not only for me from a personal standpoint, but if we're ever going to get this thing to become a video. And if it becomes video, everybody is telling me if it becomes video, it's going to be picked up by Geek TV or Tech TV or one of the other major entities, so the Linux community will actually have a voice.
Especially when they find out how good looking we all are.
Oh yeah, yeah, all 300 pounds of me. Yeah, yeah, that'll be good. So, until next week, on behalf of the whole crew here, well, if you haven't voted yet and you live in Hawaii, go to the polls. But other than that, everybody is...
Polls are still open in California.
They are?
Yeah.
Well, okay, if you're in California. And Arnie says the polls are still open in California.
Yeah, again, another little less than an hour.
Better hurry to vote. You're going to vote for all those Kennedys, man. You got to get in there quick.
You got to vote for at least two or three of those Kennedys, don't you? Well, okay. On behalf of the whole crew, we are out of here. We'll see everybody next week.
Yes, you can sponsor The Linux Show. Here's an example. Insert your company name here. Is a valued sponsor of The Linux Show. Here's another example. Insert your company name here. Is bringing you this special segment of The Linux Show. Now, thanks for checking this out and sponsor The Linux Show.